Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is William Henry in his book, One Foot in Atlantics, The Secret Occult History of World War II and Its Impact on New Age Politics. And it's available by calling 1-888-690-1277. That's 888-690-1277. Of course, you can get his website at www.williamhenry.net. And we were talking about certainly the occult influences, and I just touched on Winston Churchill, and I was amazed that you'd picked up on the fact that Churchill was responsible for suppressing any information about the occult influence on Nazism at the Nuremberg trials. So why don't you, do you want to get a little bit into Churchill? Because, of course, you can't discuss Roosevelt during the Second World War without bringing Churchill into it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, one thing that I've learned as I've began to understand the language that these gentlemen were speaking is that FDR and Churchill had big mouths. I mean, once you understand the mysteries that they were involved in, they told the world what they were doing. But nobody understood what they were saying.
Well, it's just like today. Most of the people out in this listening audience, they think probably they were quite mad, you know. Where can you be talking about these things? Well, we've got the books written by the occultists who openly write about it. But because they're dedicated to believing what Barbara Walters and Dan Rather and Tom Brokaw and Peter Jennings told them, that's what they believe. That's their reality. And, of course, they're living in the false world. This is the real world, the world where the real battle is being fought. So what about Winston? Where does Winnie fit into this?
Well, he turns out he was the biggest big mouth of them all, it seems to me. He, of course, as you mentioned, was a druid, initiated into the Albion Lodge of Druids, which were dedicated to the search for or preservation of the secrets of the Holy Grail.
Right.
And, in fact, there's photographs showing him at his druid initiation ceremony. He's famed for his V for victory symbol. That's not a V for victory symbol. That's a druid symbol. It's the symbol for the goddess, the
right.
Druid goddess. And to those in the know, including Adolf Hitler, that V represents a V for vessel, as in the vessel of the Grail. And to those in the know, including Hitler, that was an insult to Hitler. Because Hitler certainly would have known what that V stood for, and it didn't mean victory. And so, all along, Churchill was constantly letting people know what was going on. There's a famous incident after the Quebec Conference when Churchill came to America. He was invited to Harvard University to receive an honorary doctorate degree. And this comes right on the heels of when General Leslie Groves had been appointed to lead the Manhattan Project. We have to remind the listeners that the Druids were famed for meeting in oak groves. And they were back called the Men of the Oak Trees. And, of course, the oaks figures prominently in FDR's story and elsewhere. But what happened was Churchill gets up there to Boston at Harvard, and he says, I'm so happy to be here among the groves. I believe groves is the key word, isn't it? And for those in the know, they know it. He's talking on multiple levels of meaning, but everyone else in the audience thinks, well, what's this guy talking about?
Sure, and we have actually a letter that, from Winston Churchill wrote to H.G. Wells, in which he says, well, I really can't talk to you about that. I can't discuss that outside of the secret circle. Of course, but people, you see, how many people are going to go through Winston Churchill's papers and find these letters? It's all there. I mean, all the information's there. But of course, the people who do the research are usually attacked, either attacked, demonized, or ignored.
Right.
And that's one advantage of at least having a voice on radio. At least we can get some of you out there. And you want to see a copy of the letter? You send us a self-addressed stamped envelope. We'll make a copy. You could read it. You can go back and we can tell you where to actually get the originals on this. I've done a lot of the research myself. I'm in contact with others who are doing the research, and we actually have that in one of the pamphlets we put together. And here's Winston Churchill talking about the secret circle. What? There aren't supposed to be any secret circles or secret organizations. If you believe that, you probably believe there's a commie under every bed.
Yeah, I mean, these guys, they just could not wait to reveal their secrets. They wanted to tell everyone. One of my other favorite stories about these guys letting everyone know the truth but only those that knew the truth understood what they were talking about, is the example of FDR after we bombed Tokyo. In the myth, this place Shambhala, Shangri-La, is thought to be connected to, I can't say this is true, I can just restate what the belief is that Shangri-La is supposed to be connected with through a tunnel system, through some sort of portal system, with other sacred spots throughout the earth. The Andes and the Four Corners area of America are mentioned, other places. The idea is that you can go from Shangri-La to the Four Corners of America with literally nothing in between. You can just go there and end up coming out on the other end. Well, after we bombed Tokyo, the world press was just absolutely astonished. Everyone wanted to know, how did American planes get into Tokyo? Not even the Chinese had been able to invade Tokyo. And FDR beamed with this big grin and says, oh, well, the planes, of course, came out of our secret base at Shangri-La.
Of course, what the truth of the matter was that there was a suicide mission. It was a one-way trip, and most of them crashed in China. Some of them got behind the Chinese line. Some of them landed in Japanese territory. And, of course, General Doolittle went down. The man who rescued the American flyers was a man named John Birch.
Now,
that was for whom the John Birch Society was named, because, of course, he was 3 days after the war ended. Peace was signed. He was killed by the communists, and the American government concealed that fact from his parents and from the world, because, of course, we were supposed to be friends with the communists. John Birch was the first a casualty of the ever-continuing Third World War that continues to this day, not between communism and capitalism, but between the forces of Christ and the forces of evil, and in my estimation. So, Winston Churchill was a Druid. We know he was with Mason, and of course he was a brother Mason to FDR, and so there was a real camaraderie between them. And, of course, the other fascinating thing is we talk about anti-Semitism. Of course, it was anti-Semitism in Germany because of the occultic beliefs of Adolf Hitler, who was a disciple of Madame Blavatsky. And we want to get into Madame Blavatsky because she is such an important part of this, but Adolf Hitler read her books on a regular basis. And the fact you've never heard of Madame Blavatsky shows how effective the thought control is. But, of course, the Jews, a lot of them wanted to get out of Germany. And they wanted to come to America, and they wanted to come to England, and of course FDR and Churchill would not let them in. A wonderful book called The Secret War Against the Jews, which is a fascinating insight into much of the suffering that the Jews have had to forego, but we specifically would not allow them to escape from Germany and come here, and the question is why? Well, of course their occultic beliefs are there as well. And of course, most occultists have an intense hatred of the Jews because, according to biblical tradition, they are God's chosen people. I'm sure you've probably gotten into some of that, haven't you?
Yes, some of it. Again, I mean, this is such an enormous subject.
Oh, I know it is. Well, anyway, here I want to get your thoughts, and we've got Mike back on the line again.
Oh, okay.
And
Mike's been back in the occult chemistry book.
Well, Mike was in this for 20 years, so. You know, he feels very, very strongly about it. And anyway, hi, Mike. Another question?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Twice in one night. When Will was talking about tunnels and portals, and then you have the President of the United States saying things like that, even though maybe it wasn't true, like you say, in that case, about the airplanes, the bombers. So, Will, are you familiar with ley lines?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I just want to be sure of that. It'd be an important concept to introduce at that point. That's what they would be traveling through the earth on, although the difficulty is that, of course, the physical object, whether it's a human body or a piece of equipment, it has to attain some spirit form to travel. But then, the next topic, though, connected with that would be the Montauk Project, where they either tried to or did travel to Mars, or who knows what all, by way of a ley line.
Now, that's getting pretty far out there now, Mike.
Well, there's a lot of stuff on it, though.
Okay, well...
And maybe Will knows a few things about the Montauk.
All right, fine. We'll ask him about that.
Yeah, Montauk is... It's on Long Island. It's the very tip of Long Island. It's about a four-hour drive from New York City. And it's a very strange place, and there's a whole array of really bizarre stories about what has allegedly occurred at Montauk. It involves Crowley and his band of people. And
you mean Alistair?
Yes, and time travel to other locations, Project Invisibility, an attempt to make U.S. warships invisible using Tesla technology, and all kinds of stuff that involves the beast of the Book of Revelation and this sort of thing.
Well, now, is there any truth to this, or is this all made up?
I can't tell for sure, because there's so little documentation. I mean, what I consider really solid documentation, and the other part of it is that the literature that is available is extremely fear-based, and I really can't say for sure. The thing that interests me in it, though, is that we're dealing with that Northeast Corridor of America, which was so interesting, or of such great interest to Sir Francis Bacon, and also to Thomas Jefferson, who was one of the, of course, the earliest presidents of the United States, and also had a deep personal interest in the language system of the early dwellers of the Montauk area, the people called the Mi'kmaq Indians. These are the same people that lived at a place nearby called Oak Island, Nova Scotia, where FDR spent so much time as a young man looking for the Holy Grail and the treasure of Captain William Kidd. Jefferson was up in that area attempting to link his Druid ancestors with the Egyptians. And he was attempting to do so through their linguistic or symbol system. Exactly the same study that so fascinated Heinrich Himmler and has so fascinated others that are attempting to recover the mystic secrets of the ancients.
I think it's really important our listeners understand that since the beginning of time, people have always been looking for the secret, or the secret of secrets. And of course, this then became, Gnosticism was based upon this idea that Kabbalah, which was a mystical system within the Jewish religion, just as Gnosticism was a mystical system within the Christian religion, looking for the hidden knowledge. The story of the Bible is all right, but what's the secret message behind it? There's some of us who don't think we need a secret message. We think that you can have a pretty simple message. God created the heaven and the earth. He didn't come from outer space or from Mars or from other planetary beings or bodies. But of course, that's so complex for some people. They want to have these ideas of life coming from Mars, and where did it come from Mars? Well, don't bother to get into that. We know it came from Mars, and that's how it got here, and that explains life. And so there are these two basic ideas. One is the rather simple one, which I tend to agree with, because I don't think we have to make it complex at all. There has to be a creator, obviously, and if there is a creator, there's got to be somebody who did that, fits that bill of goods, and we call that the God of the Bible. But these others are always looking beyond that for the force, the secret message, the intelligence that will make them more like God. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, I mean, Sir Isaac Newton could not have said it better, because he was another in the long line of these people that you've mentioned: Alexander the Great, Constantine, Charlemagne, Adolf Hitler, all believed that they were looking for secrets that would enable them not only to communicate with the gods, but to become one.
Well, now, what was this story about Wallace and Roosevelt wanting to send people over into the Himalayas looking for Jesus? Now, that would not be the Jesus of the Bible. This would be what the people believe are the ancients of wisdom, these so-called wise men who have been human beings and have evolved to a higher plane. Now, I don't believe it ever happened, but they believe that. And you have to understand what the other people, the other side, believe to understand so much of what's going on in the world today. So what was that story all about?
Well, it started after Rorick returned from India in 1928 or 29. He claimed that he had received a sacred stone that had helped him in the participate in the failed formation of the League of Nations, and he had returned the stone to India after that. And he hooked up with Henry Wallace in 1929. That's the, their first meeting, and it was at the opening of Rorich's Museum in New York City.
I just want to take an aside. You had actually quotations from Wallace's writings to Rorich where he referred to him as guru.
That's right, and what I was just going to say is that Henry Wallace ended up writing Nicholas Rorich 117 letters. This was no casual relationship that these men had. This was a very intense relationship, not a physically close one. In other words, they weren't together a lot, but they were writing back and forth considerably. And these letters are called the Guru letters.
Where are they? Are they published someplace?
Yes, they're. I got copies of them from the Pegler collection at the Herbert Hoover Library. They're also in the Rosenman collection at the FDR Library.
Fascinating.
The letters are phenomenal. I mean, especially when you consider that this man was the Secretary of Agriculture while writing these letters. There's one that says, which is one of the most famous ones, that, and by the way, these letters have never been decoded. There was a columnist in the 1940s and 50s named Westbrook Pegler, who wrote for the Scripps Howard News Service, that looked into these letters in depth, spent quite a sum of money validating that Wallace actually wrote them and was trying to pin him down on exactly what he meant when he said, "Dear Guru, we await the casket, the sacred most precious casket in this great land of destiny." He talked about Maitreya, who is the Buddhist Christ. He talked about the Great Ones. He talked about a Holocaust in America and the need for a Holocaust in America. He talked about the establishment of a new spiritual state they called Kansas. These are all, his letters are peppered with occult symbols, occult terminology, all on the letterhead of the Secretary of Agriculture. Some of them are handwritten, but all of them reveal Wallace's belief that Nicholas Rorich was not just a representative of a god, but as his other followers believed, that Rorich was in fact a god himself.
And for our listeners who do not remember the history of this time, then Wallace ran for the presidency as an independent in 1948. I remember when he went to the University of California campus, and I was an undergraduate there and hearing him speak.
Oh, wow.
And of course, he was at that time very closely affiliated with the Communist Party. The Communists were backing Henry Wallace at that time. So here suddenly we see the Communists backing a man who's deeply steeped in the occult.
That's right. And it was actually at that time that Westbrook Pegler as well as H.L. Mencken were attempting to corner Wallace and say, "What are you doing with these letters? What do these mean?" And of course, he never, ever made one single public statement about those letters. What happened was they put Nicholas Rorich on the payroll of the Secretary of Agriculture, the Department of Agriculture. The idea was they told the world that they were there looking for drought-resistant grasses because America had been decimated by the dust storm. It became a dust bowl. And they had heard about these healing grasses, these drought-resistant grasses in the area of Mongolia. Well, as reported in Newsweek magazine, it was common knowledge in the halls of the Roosevelt administration that they were actually looking for signs of the Second Coming. And so Nicholas Rorich, the employee of the government, packs up and goes to Mongolia. And he kind of pulls a fast one on Wallace. He gets over there and he starts to try and launch this spiritual revolution. And he starts saying that he produces these letters that saying he's an official representative of the United States government and you better get out of my way. And this causes great embarrassment for Henry Wallace and, of course, the president. And
now, is this written up in where was this written up?
This was in Newsweek magazine reported it.
Really? That's a long, long time ago.
Yeah. And then, of course, the Pegler papers, Westbrook Pegler wrote around 29 articles about this, detailing it. The people that were involved, what they were doing. He interviewed surviving members of the search party, the so-called search party. He never, Westbrook Pegler was kind of a sports writer to begin with. He didn't have a cult background to look at this, so he was very handicapped going in. So he couldn't fully understand what was going on, although he did spend a good part of his life attempting to understand it, but never made an attempt to reveal the inner meaning of what Wallace was doing and just the enormity of this undertaking.
Well, the trouble, William, is that so few people understand this. And I'm sure that many of our listeners out there are scratching their heads and saying, what's this all about?
Right.
I mean, who's this Helena Petrovna Blavatsky he's talking about? One of the most important figures of the last 150 years. And you've never heard of her because you're not supposed to. We've got Jim calling from Santa Cruz. And, of course, Westbrook Pegler was a great patriot. He loved America. But I could see where he'd get lost in this whole thing. I've been studying this for 37 years, and I'm learning things all the time. In fact, I learned a lot from your book. Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Good, Stan.
A question or comment?
I just wanted to make a comment. I'm familiar with the subject that you guys are talking about with Henry A. Wallace and the Theosophical Society. And I know, and I just wanted to add that I know that one of the things that added to his controversy when he was a presidential candidate was that he was, you know, pro-Stalinist.
No, sure he was. He was, of course, he'd gone to Russia and, took a tour of Russia and said, there are no prison camps here.
Yeah. And I think that that's pretty much unforgivable that he could display that kind of ignorance in a blind eye. That's ridiculous.
Okay, anything else?
It's my understanding that Madame Blavatsky's, or Helena Blavatsky's material, derived from Freemasonry.
She was actually a female Mason, and of course does come out of Masonry, right?
Yeah, and then for some reason, then she went to Tibet and was initiated in the mysteries of some Buddhist sect in Tibet.
Right, and she met her master there, who then would communicate to her telepathically, and there's no way that Helena could have written those books by herself. They were simply channeled.
Yeah.
Or plagiarized.
Okay, well, we'll get the Williams' views on that. Anything else you want to say, Jim?
No, not at this point.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Okay,
fine. Let's finish up the story of Rourke, and then let's get into Helena, because she's one of my favorite characters.
Right, so Rourke gets over there and is en route to Mongolia, purportedly looking for signs of the Second Coming, and pulls that fast one on the president, on Wallace, and begins to launch his spiritual revolution.
Now, what's he trying to do, get the Indians involved in this, or what?
Yeah, and what he was trying to do was launch a spiritual state in Siberia, ultimately. He was attempting to return to Russia. In fact, he did return to Moscow during this time and overturn the Bolshevik Revolution. And effectively, I mean, it's not stated, but you get the inference that he was trying to do is believing that as his family lineage were the founders of Russia, you get the idea that Rurik was attempting to install himself as a new czar of some kind.
Okay.
And so this causes, of course, great embarrassment for Wallace, and Wallace fires him by cable. So there was never an official report filed by Nicholas Rurik. And what they did, they gave him the income tax treatment. They banned him from the United States by cooking up this charge that Nicholas Rurik owed several hundred thousand dollars in back taxes, which of course he didn't. And what's interesting about this is that one of Wallace's cohorts in giving him the income tax treatment was a fellow by the name of Louis Horch. And Louis Horch had given Rurik millions of dollars in the 1920s. He was a very wealthy New York broker. And Wallace persuaded Horch to file suit against Rurik in order to claim possession of all Rurik's paintings, all of his artifacts, all of his research, so on and so forth. And then after this, Henry Wallace gave Louis Horch a job in the Department of Commerce when Wallace moved over from agriculture over to the Department of Commerce.
Gee, there's no honor among occultists, is there?
Pardon me?
No honor among occultists.
No. And then Rorich made these statements that he's like, you know, Horch and Wallace know what, I can't remember the exact word that he used, but he, you know, this, the inference exactly what you were saying, that these people are,
they're evil, basically.
Boy, I mean, that's calling the pot, the pot calling the kettle black. Right. But of course, all of this is go ahead.
But it's just a truly phenomenal story. With these people believe that they were doing, it's almost beyond comprehension. And then, you know, to have the whole thing finished off in 1935 with FDR stamping the Great Seal on the back of the $1 bill, it just makes you wonder, did they find something there? If so, what did they find? What's happened with it? It's all pure speculation, because as far as many historians believe, you know, none of this ever happened anyway. And it's a difficult trail to follow, but it's certain that search did happen. It's documented in the New York Supreme Court, in income tax records at the IRS and elsewhere, that Nicholas Rorich was an employee of the United States government. And it's well documented exactly what they believed that they were doing.
And so just as Adolf Hitler was sending his agents into the southern part of France looking for the relics of the Holy Grail.
At the exact same time.
Right. And so you see these two parallel occult forces at work. And, of course, by this time, Christianity is having less and less influence on the American government. And by this time, of course, the occult has already begun infiltrating the churches, the seminaries, to destroy the foundations of Christendom here in the United States. Now, let's get into Helena, because I think she is such an important part of this whole story. Why don't you tell her story? And, of course, for our listeners out there, who were her disciples? They were men like Thomas Edison, one of the great minds of our time. But, of course, he would go into these trances and he'd come up with these wonderful ideas, but they weren't necessarily his ideas.
Right.
Of course, they were transmitted into the things that make our life so comfortable today. So many of the great advances came from Edison or from Tesla. And I was fascinated to see that Tesla also would have these supernatural experiences as well. Ladies and gentlemen, you want to avoid these things personally. Let me warn you that if you think about dabbling in it, do not for fear of your eternal soul. But you need to understand that this is not imaginary. So pick up the story of Helena.
Right, another Russian. She very early on felt like she was a very liberated woman for her time, growing up in the late 1870s, early 1880s, when she left Russia. Married a general by the name of Blavatsky, and probably never consummated her marriage with him. But he enabled her to escape Russia. She traveled around the world, lived in Tibet for a time, actually disguised herself as a man in order that she could enter the Buddhist lamasseries there, and finally ended up in New York City, where Victorian America was ripe for a very charismatic woman who had worldly tales of fabulous tales of Mahatmas and masters of the Far East and elsewhere, and came to New York, set up shop, and began to take over the world, literally.
And I think we have to understand she had a profound, profound impact. Arthur Conan Doyle, who wrote the Sherlock Holmes mysteries, was one of her disciples, as was Thomas Edison. There was William Stead, one of the three men who formed Cecil Rhodes' original secret society. But that's another story. Why don't we go ahead a little bit? We've got about a minute and a half before we have to go to our break.
Yeah, what always amazed me about Madame Blavatsky is the encyclopedic knowledge that she had seemed to have a grasp of, whether she actually wrote her works or not. Her first book,
Isis Unveiled?
Yes, sold out in a matter of weeks. It runs, about 1,500 pages. And I mean, she just kind of jotted this work out, and I mean, it's just truly, it's not a masterpiece, that's not the right word, it's just absolutely encyclopedic.
Encyclopedic, I think, is the word for it.
And to try to duplicate something like that today is not impossible, certainly, but it would take a tremendous amount of effort.
But, of course, here's a woman who's totally uneducated.
Right.
You know, she runs away when she's 16, you know, to marry General Blavatsky. So, you know, of course, she claimed that these were channeled to her, and I believe that there is this entity of channeling supernatural intelligence, but not necessarily coming from the right side. We're got another 3-minute break. So, William, if you'd like to get
okay.
Another cup of coffee or a glass of orange juice this time,
okay.
We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And if you're out there across America listening to this, I hope that we're at least intriguing you enough that you want to look further into this. And much of this is covered in many of the books we have here by Gary Kaw, Demonic Roots of Globalism, The New World Religions by Gary Kaw. And, of course, his first book, En Route to Global Occupation, begins to lead into these subjects. And, of course, The New World Order, The Ancient Plan of Secret Societies, our four-tape set on the pagan agenda. But or we even have a pagan agenda special. But you may very well want to get a copy of this talk we're having with William Henry tonight, because you're being introduced to ideas and thoughts which are so foreign to most people and yet are the basis of the whole move towards the New World Order. What's stamped beneath the pyramid on the back of the dollar bill? Novus Ordo Seclorum, the new secular order, the new social order, the new world order. This is an age-old idea, as old as time, where man, of course, will become God. And that was the message of the serpent in the Garden of Eden. And you need to understand the spiritual battle before you can be effective in the political, ideological, or cultural war that's raging around us. So we hope that many of you will want to join the Radio Liberty family and help us to get this sort of information out and then get educated yourself and then help us educate the American people to prepare them for what lies ahead, for those who are not Christians, to draw them into a closer relationship with Jesus Christ, or if they are Christians, to reinforce their faith, because truly we will need our faith in the months and years that lie ahead. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, and I want to tell you right off the bat, we're not a 501c3, we're not a tax-exempt organization, but we hope that you'll want to join the Radio Liberty family, and for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get the four best tapes of the month, you'll get our monthly newsletter, but mostly you'll be helping us to get the truth out across America. Again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Let me also mention, if you're living here, well, I guess any place across America, ABC on Sunday evening is having a film on Jesus. Apparently, it's a two-hour animated but quite well-done factual film on the life of Jesus. They're specifically not going to advertise it. Then they're going to see how many people watch it. Now, if you wanted to have a film fail, that would be the way to do it. You would put it on between 7 and 9 when most people are eating dinner. That's not the time. Ordinarily, you're supposed to put the films on from 9 to 11. No, they're going to put it on from 7 to 9. And then they're not going to advertise it, so nobody will know what's coming on. They'll probably have the most boring program in all of history on immediately before that, so nobody will possibly be listening to the program and just see this film come on. Well, we're suggesting that everybody, if you are a believer, listen to it, watch it, let the advertisers know how much you like it, write to ABC and tell them how great it is. This is Sunday evening, this coming Sunday. It's known as The Miracle Maker, and we advise that you watch this, write to the advertisers, write to ABC and say, hey, we'd like to see more programs like that. Let's see if we can't do something a little aggressive. They want it to fail. Let's make sure it's a great success. Tell your friends about it. The Miracle Maker, this Sunday, ABC, here in the Monterey Bay area. That's Channel 11. And Sunday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. And now we'll be back with our special guest for this evening, Mr. William Henry. Well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is a fascinating gentleman. His name is William Henry. He's a little younger than I am. I've got his picture here on the back of his book, but you can get the book at, by calling 888-690-1277. That's 888-690-1277. And his website is www.williamhenry.net. And if you want that anymore, why, if you didn't get it, we'll try to get it out once more before the program ends. And we've been talking, starting to get into Helena Petrovic Blavatsky, who is certainly one of the most important figures of modern times, because her influence, first of all, as a Mason, and then developing her own secret society, really is kept fairly well secret for 100 years, till it really became more or less public. 100 years after it was created in 1875, began to talk about it in 1975. It is the basis of the New Age, which has bookstores all across America. Many of our leading politicians are disciples of it, as is Al Gore. In fact, his whole book, Earth in the Balance, is total New Age philosophy. And many of our leaders, but don't feel bad if you're a Republican and you're chortling because Al Gore is this, so is Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich is deeply involved in all of these same ideas. People in both political parties are pushing exactly the same philosophy of the new spirituality. Now, they're not going to stand up before you and tell you that, but that's where they're really coming from. In fact, Newt Gingrich and Al Gore, when they were both in Congress, belonged to this congressional committee, special committee for studying the future planning, and of course Toffler was the guru for Newt Gingrich. And if you haven't read Alvin Toffler's work, why, you really need to understand it to understand why the Republican Revolution failed. It failed because it was supposed to fail, and nothing's going to change until you get educated and you get involved and you get responsible people into our government. Well, let's get right on back to Will Henry, and why don't you tell us a little bit more about Helena?
Yeah, if you've never seen a picture of Helena Blavatsky, you'll never forget it the first time that you do. She had, in fact, one of her cousins described her, she said, they'll never forget that face because of those eyes. She had these incredibly penetrating eyes. And
You know, if I just an aside, I think that was so interesting. I saw that notation in your book. Colonel House had exactly the same eyes, and you can look at a picture of him taken almost 100 years ago, and those eyes looked like they came right out of the pit of hell, and that's the same expression in the eyes of Helena.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, she's quite a spooky-looking person. And through those eyes, she asked people to peer into other dimensions, and that was kind of the real key sort of thing. She opened a window almost into this other world that many people didn't even know existed. But out of that window, that door that she opened up, came traipsing a whole cast of characters that spawned, helped spawn the Nazi Party, that helped spawn this belief in other dimensional beings, including extraterrestrials, an idea that's so popular today.
Don't forget that Margaret Sanger was also involved with Theosophy.
Right. And of course, as we've been talking tonight, the two other key figures that were involved in the Theosophical Society were Nicholas Roerich and Henry Wallace. And the key point that I try to make whenever I possibly can is that, look, Henry Wallace, as we've said so many times tonight, was just one office away from the presidency of the United States. And we have to know the religious and spiritual beliefs of our political leaders, because otherwise, we have no idea what kind of trail these folks are leading us down. And that was the real reason that I wrote the book One Foot in Atlantis, was to help educate people that, look, this is what these people believed then. They still believe it today.
Amen to that. And that's what people do not understand. The occult beliefs are there. Since 1945, actually since 1932, of all the presidents of the United States, all of them have either come from the Council on Foreign Relations, which was founded from the occult, or from the Masons, all but one. And, of course, he took a trip to Dallas. Mm-hmm. Is that just coincidence, or is that perhaps part of a pattern?
Huh.
Well, anyway, that's a little-known fact that nobody ever wants to discuss. But even some of our most revered Republican presidents, if not Masons before they entered the White House, actually invited the Masons to come in to take them into the 33rd degree. And that was certainly one of our great, our greatest Republican president of this last century. At least that's what we're told. And yet, of course, you look at some of the things he did, and you have to sort of question perhaps our reality is being molded by the media out there.
Yeah, I mean, I made the point in the book that we live in FDR's world now, and maybe it is the new Atlantis that was described by the prophets of the past, or Francis Bacon, if you call them prophets, or just simply visionaries, authors. The point is that all of those works are purported to be fiction, that many of them are based loosely on some kind of a fact, but what we're dealing with today are the results of the, of those efforts. When we look around us today, we are creating a new version of humanity. We're involved in genetics research that is going to enable us to not just prolong our lifespan, but literally to regenerate our limbs. We can genetically create a new version of humanity. We're implanting computer chips in our human body. We're becoming half man, half robot. Is that going to be this new model man that Adolf Hitler envisioned? Or is this new model man going to be the product of some genetic lab in Scotland or in Boston or in San Francisco? That's the conclusion of my book, is that we've got to become aware of these choices and decisions that we're making for our future, because many of them go starkly against nature. And we know that when we start messing with nature, we're in big trouble. But the seeds of these decisions have been planted at least a generation ago, but we're seeing them come to life on our televisions and our newspapers on a daily basis. And it's time, I think, we take a look at some of these decisions and ask ourselves if we really want to do this to ourselves.
And, of course, I think that increasingly we're going to see a polarization of society between those who believe in the traditional Judeo-Christian beliefs and those people who embrace these ideas of the New Age, of this a new spirituality, of crystal power, of all of these things. But from whence does this knowledge come? Because there is a hidden knowledge out there. I have no question at all that there is. In fact, for a time, I even studied some of these things. And I'll tell you what, the more I studied them, I found, first of all, that they worked very well. But the more I studied them, the more frightening they came. And I, as a physician, I simply abandoned them because I did not feel that I could continue down this road for fear of what I was learning.
Right. And, I mean, the other thing that comes to my mind as you were saying that, we're talking about the imbalances in our world, is, and this is what's partly going on in Washington this weekend or last weekend with the World Trade Organization meeting, is that while there's so many people that are trying to launch us into this new age where we've got computer chips in our brains and we're taking this pill to increase this ability and that ability, we forget that half of the people on this planet are still 2.5 days walk from the nearest telephone and don't even have access to a toilet. And there's just something wrong if we've got that kind of a situation on our planet. And there's going to be a day of reckoning. That's where we're headed right now.
Well, I agree with you totally, in fact. But it's interesting that they tell us, well, things are a lot better. It used to be that there were 2.5 billion people who lived in abject poverty. Now there's only 1.5 billion. But, of course, with the knowledge that we have and the ability we have, there's no reason for any of this. And things can be made better. But are we going about it in the right way as we finance dictators throughout the world? As America is the greatest arms exporter in the world today, and, of course, the Russians are the second greatest, and, of course, we're financing them so they can keep up their arms sales. And, of course, these are being used to finance both sides of the wars.
Right.
That's the great tragedy and the slaughter and carnage that's going on. There are 20 or more wars going on in the world today. There are a million of women who are living in sex slavery. I just cut this out of the newspaper the other day. You never hear about these things, the genocide that's going on in the Sudan today, being financed by the money being raised by Petro China, being raised on American capital markets today. Because there's a profit to be made, and there's something wrong with the scenario. Well, what is your suggestion? Because I know you've thought about this, you think about it very deeply. You've written, how many books have you written now?
I've written 4. I have 3 that are published, and I've just completed a 4th.
In fact, you sent me another one of your books. What was that one?
Probably The Peacemaker and the Key of Life.
All right. Well, I haven't had a chance to look at that after I do, while I want to get you on, and perhaps we can continue this, because I think this has been a fascinating discussion. And I'm surprised that we aren't having more people calling in, but I find many times if people are interested in what they're hearing, they don't call. If you, we've just got a few minutes more. If you're out there in the listening audience, you'd like to give us a call at 464-8295 or 1-888-2-4-LIBERTY. But let me just, for our listeners out there, let me give you my slant on this. I believe that the majority of people who came to America were Christian. I believe that they came, the Puritans and the Quakers and the Pilgrims and the Huguenots, they all came to America for the ability to practice their religion, and they were basically a Christian in their beliefs. Different sects of Christianity, the Anglicans came later, bringing the Episcopalian religion, and of course then we had the Congregationalists. But at the same time you had the Christian foundations of America, you also had the occult foundations, and this is why people are confused. They can't understand why the things happen as they do, because there have been two parallel forces. Now, of course, many of these forces go back to the time of the Renaissance and the Reformation. One, of course, humanistic and occultic. The other, the Reformation of the Church, trying to get away from the fixed beliefs of traditional Catholicism to the point where man could have a personal communication with God. But, of course, we've had these two forces in conflict here in America going back to the 1620s, 1625s. But, of course, under the administration of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who then began to pack our Supreme Court with men who were anti-Christian or anti-Judeo-Christian, and that is why they took God out of our schools. And the fact that you've never heard that before reflects the degree of control that today exists of what the American people think. And it was during that era when the occultists controlled our Supreme Court that we had Engler versus Vitale in 1962. The occultists controlled, the Masons controlled the Supreme Court from 1941 to 1971, from majorities of 5 to 4 to 1.8 to 1. They were in total control of our Supreme Court. Why didn't anybody mention that? Well, I think that you can imagine why. It is because of the occultic control. Because you have to understand that the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commissions, all of these organizations have their foundation in the occult. Why doesn't anybody mention that? Because all of these occult organizations have one goal in common. The establishment, well, they have two goals in common. The establishment of a one-world government and the establishment of a new world religion. Do you see this? Well, where would you agree or disagree with what I said?
No, I think that makes total sense. Part of what I researched in my book, The Peacemaker and the Key of Life, was the symbolism that's there at the United Nations building. And it's if you ever have doubted any of this, take a look in the meditation room at the UN. They've got a massive 6.5-ton black iron ore cube that was installed there by Dag Hammarskjöld. He went to Sweden and looked over 60, made him pull out 60 of these blocks, over 6.5 tons, before he found the right one that would be representative of all the world's religions, all coming together as one, as the foundation stone, of the cornerstone, if you will, of the United Nations. So, I mean, here you had FDR stamping the same symbol, essentially, on the back of the $1 bill, and Dag Hammarskjöld comes along in 1953 and reemphasizes this same ideal of this world government. I mean, there's no question that that's where they're trying to take us.
And that's exactly where we're going, ladies and gentlemen. If you think you're going to have any freedom or rights when the new world government comes, you're sadly mistaken. And those of you out in the listening audience, if you'd like a copy of my latest newsletter, which I think is really rather to the point, and what's amazing going along with this program is so much of what we're talking about tonight I put in that newsletter long before I ever read William Henry's book, so I think that you'll find that interesting. And if you're not a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, you can call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and we'll introduce you to the Arcanum and the I always have difficulty pronouncing it, and Cornerium. I think that's something. Do you know the term?
No, I do not.
All right, fine. Well, it's known as the first is known as the secrets, and the second is known as the secret of secrets. Anyway, I had to look that up in the dictionary, but it was a phrase that Manly P. Hall used. Mike called back in again, and he wanted to know what you knew about Krishnamurti. Why don't you tell our listeners about Krishnamurti?
Are you asking me or Mike?
Right, you.
No.
Mike had called in wanted to know about it. And I think our listeners really need to know who he was, because he was a very important individual in our contemporary history. And, of course, they don't teach that in their history books. But then they don't teach anything much of any significance, except maybe about Marilyn Monroe. And...
Yeah, I have sketchy knowledge of J. Krishnamurti.
All right. Well, basically, he was the gentleman who they were going to have as the Christ. He was going to be the Maitreya. He was going to be the Christ who was going to come to lead the world to the New World Order. And, of course, Annie Besant really had sort of picked him to carry the mantle. He was an Indian. He had been raised as a guru there. And he was a very attractive, a very charismatic young man. And he was brought to the United States to accept the mantle to become the world leader. And, of course, everything was in place. He was getting this tremendous buildup in the media at that time, which they already had a tremendous influence over, because the people who controlled our media even then were deeply involved with the occult sciences. And Krishnamurti one day came in and announced to Annie Besant that he didn't want to be the world leader. and he didn't think that he didn't want to spend his life that way. He wanted to think of other things and ways of spending his life. And that, of course, set them back 80 years. And this was about 1920, and maybe Mike could correct me. The dates I'm not too clear on, but it was sometime during the early part of the century when Krishnamurti was brought to America from India to become the world leader. Well, you see, all this gets back to Plato's idea of the so-called just ruler who will rule the world. Of course, from a Christian point of view, we believe that this occult leader is going to eventually be exposed to be not the Christ, but the Antichrist. And, of course, behind all of this is the secret of secrets, which is, of course, that there are two gods in the world. There's the bad God, that's the God of the Bible, and the good God, which, of course, is the serpent. And the serpent then, of course, works through our lives, and that is the one we should worship. Well, believe me, I don't believe that at all. But that, of course, that it was in the Garden of Eden that the serpent liberated Adam. That's the terms that they use. And, of course, because Adam transgressed against God's instructions, why he was victorious. Have you heard these ideas?
Oh, of course, yes, absolutely. I mean, you have to get in them to understand at all what these people are talking about.
And, of course, they think that Lucifer is the good God. He's the angel of light, because
right.
He gives you freedom. You can do whatever you want to. You don't have these restraints. What does God do? He's got 10 commandments, and they say, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not commit adultery. He wants to take all the fun out of life. You can be free if you, of course, go to the other side. But the problem is that when you go to the other side, you get chaos. In fact, there is no freedom without God's restraints. Without restraints, there is no freedom. If you try to use your own restraints, forget it, because you're always going to do the wrong thing. If you know what God has said, then, of course, he's laid it out very clearly for you, and you know right and you know wrong, and you don't want to be committing adultery. Not only is it bad, it creates all sorts of bad relationships, it gets you all sorts of horrible diseases, and people are dying today because they're violating God's sexual laws. They're there for our protection, not to take away our fun, but to give us the greatest satisfaction that we possibly can have, and that is an intimate relationship with someone that we love all of our lives. But, of course, those ideas are totally rejected and increasingly rejected by our society today. Well, William, we're sort of running out of time. We've got 2 or 3 minutes. Why don't you sort of finish up your thoughts and your ideas? Once again, the book is available by calling 1-888-690-1277. But why don't you give us your thoughts?
Well, I certainly appreciate the opportunity to express some of these views tonight. And it's been a wonderful time for me, a great education. I've learned several things from your callers as well as from you, Dr. Stan. I certainly appreciate that. And I just hope that everyone will continue to keep an open mind, but also use their own power of discernment here, because there's just so much that's going on right now. And everyone, I just always encourage people to look within their own heart, to keep it a heart-centered place. Don't let the mind kind of take over, and just keep focused on the light. That's the best thing that we can do right now, and educate yourself.
Now, that's what you do, and of course, you did a great job. I admire the extensive research you've done. I think that I learned a lot just from reading your book and from our conversations this evening. And I'll take a look at the other book, and perhaps we can get you back onto our program after I've had a chance to do that. But I ended up yesterday, I looked at my son and I said, hey, I've got two books I got to read by tomorrow. And so I was up, I want you to know, I was at 2 o'clock this morning reading your book.
Thank you.
Anyway, God bless you. Thanks so very much for being
here. Thank you. My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, this has been an entirely different type of program, and I hope that you're out there in the listening audience have enjoyed it as much as I have, because this is the information you need to know. It's foundational to an understanding of the very real spiritual battle in which we're engaged. And this month's newsletter, we simply give you the quotations from Manly P. Hall, from his lectures on ancient philosophy, and his books, What the Ancient Wisdom Expects of His Disciples. Who was Manly P. Hall? Well, according to the Masons, he was the leading Masonic philosopher of all time. So he ought to know about what he's writing about. In fact, he wrote many of these books before he ever became a Mason. But he understood the ancient philosophy, and of course he was a 33rd degree Mason at the time. He died lauded, applauded by these people, because they understand that there is the secret knowledge, there are the secret organizations, and it's not just Masonry, it's Theosophy, Rosicrucianism, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Skull and Bones. We can go into a myriad of secret and covert organizations that are out there, all have one goal, or two goals in common, I should say, one world government, the Novo Ordo Seclorum, that's described on the back of your dollar bill. The other, of course, is the destruction of Christianity and Christendom and supplanting it with a one world religion. And increasingly, you're going to hear about how intolerant Christianity is. Why, Christianity says it's the only way. Just because Jesus said, I am the way and the truth and the life, and no man cometh unto the Lord except through me. Isn't that an intolerant position? I don't think it's intolerant at all. I believe that there is only one way to know our Lord, and that is through the pathway of Christianity. If you don't believe it, that, of course, is your choice. But one of these days, all of us are going to stand before the throne of judgment. And if you were to actually die tomorrow, are you certain you'd go to heaven? And if you were to stand before the throne of God and he asked you, what right do you have to come into heaven? What would your answer be? I've been a good person. None of us have really been good enough to be worthy of God's justice, because all of us have sinned and come short of the glory of God. And, of course, our hope is in Christ's sacrifice for us, Christ's salvation, and being the sacrifice for our sins. That's the simple message of Christianity. And all you really need to do, if you do not have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, is get down on your knees and say, Lord, I'm a sinner. Come in, take over my life. I know I can't do it alone. And you'll be amazed. I did that some 37 years ago, and my life has never been the same again. Try it. And until tomorrow evening at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.